Vladimir Putin heads to Central Asia, supporters of Boris Nemtsov mark 2 years since his assassination, and the contact group on the Ukraine conflict meets again in Minsk. Hello from our broadcast headquarters in Prague, and welcome to the Power Vertical Briefing, a weekly look ahead at stories we expect to make news this week. My name is Brian Whitmore, host of the Power Vertical podcast here at RFRL, and joining me in the studio is RFRL's news editor, Steve Gutterman. Welcome, Steve.
Hi, Brian.
So Putin begins his tour of Central Asia today with a visit to Kazakhstan and Tajikistan. The trip continues with a visit to Kyrgyzstan tomorrow. I find the Kazakhstan leg the most interesting, given President Nursultan Nazarbayev's recent announcement that he would devolve some powers to the country's parliament. He's probably one of the most wily post-Soviet leaders. Nazarbayev's pursued a multi-vectored foreign policy, balancing relations very successfully with Russia, China, the Middle East, and the United States. He's also been actively promoting a new cadre of leaders to assure a smooth transition of power when he eventually passes from the scene. And with talk of transition in the air, Russia is very keen to protect its interests. And I see that as the main goal of Putin's visit. What will you be watching for in Putin's Central Asian tour, Steve?
Yeah, I mean, I think that is the main goal, not only of Putin's visit to Kazakhstan, but also the other countries. I think one thing is that there's been a lot of attention in Russia and by Russia to the U.S. and Europe lately, the U.S. election. And I think Putin may feel that he needs to kind of go back and pay some attention to the countries close to Russia, where, you know, where he has to worry about actually maintaining influence going forward in the future. And Kazakhstan is one where you have, you know, these leaders who are not getting any younger. And Putin certainly wants to be in on whatever transition takes place whenever it does take place. So I think probably they're concerned in Russia about the way things are going there, especially with, you know, obviously China growing power and importance. So, yeah, I think he wants to shore things up there.
And it's interesting because a lot of people would say that the Kazakh model was what Putin used, basically, when he consolidated power in Russia, that he followed the kind of the lead of Nazarbayev in creating this managed democracy with the strong leader on the top. And now Kazakhstan's introducing another model, or maybe they are. I don't know how skeptical to be about this. I'm not a Kazakhstan expert by any stretch of the imagination.
But right.
It's, the, you know, by devolving power to the parliament, by actively preparing for a transition, while Putin seems to be actively ignoring any search for a successor or a transition. Kazakhstan's doing something a little bit different here.
Yeah, that's true. And yeah, as you know, I mean, in the Kremlin, they won't talk about the presidential election even no. You know, even next year's now, saying, "Oh, it's too early,
right.
Too early." So I think, yeah, they may be wondering, you know, what exactly is going on there. I mean, another Kyrgyzstan also is interesting because now there's political turmoil there over the detention of an opposition leader.
Yeah.
So, you know, Putin comes in there at a time when there's tension, you know, protests in the outside on the main square. So, you know, I think, as you say, the main purpose is to kind of touch base and kind of reiterate interest and try to grab hold of the reins more.
Now, there's an interesting parallel process going. You mentioned that the attention had previously been on been west towards
right,
and now it's moving east. But you see a similar dynamic in this so far is that Europe and the United States and Russia are competing for influence in countries like Georgia, Moldova, Ukraine. Russia and China are competing for interest in these Central Asian countries. It's not as stark a conflict, but it's happening. There is a competition for interest.
Absolutely,
there.
Yes.
And this will be something to watch. In other news, today marks the second anniversary of the assassination of Boris Nemtsov. Thousands marched in Moscow last night. Two new documentary films have been released in his honor. Nemtsov supporters continue to erect makeshift memorials on the bridge where he was slain, and the authorities continue to take them down. And those who order the assassination have still not been brought to justice. Steve, any thoughts on the two-year anniversary of Nemtsov's death?
Well, a couple of thoughts. I mean, one thing that's sort of striking is that, you know, this march yesterday with about 15,000 people, I guess, according to the organizers, which sounds about right, judging from the what the crowd size looked like. You know, it's pretty much the biggest I'd say opposition march, you know, in Russia for since the last one last year. So, you know, that sort of shows you where things are. You know, a pretty impressive turnout. But I guess, I mean, I read somewhere this morning that where someone was saying the fact that, you know, a high level crime like this, you know, has gone unsolved is the sign of a failed state. And I think, you know, there's something to that. I mean, if you can't solve this crime, either you're, you know, or at least the critics of the Kremlin say either you're trying not to or you can't. So, you know, I think it's probably a mixture of the two here. So, you know, 2 years, pretty much the same as 1 year. You have these guys who are being tried, and presumably they will eventually be convicted. Right. But, you know, as Nemtsov's relatives and supporters say, well, that's not going to be justice because whoever was behind it won't be identified at that point.
And that's because, and let's call a spade here. I mean, everybody suspects that Ramzan Kadyrov was the ultimate mastermind here. And politically, and I think the Kremlin knows that. The FSB certainly tried to make that clear in the early stage of the investigation. But they're not going to go after Kadyrov,
right,
or anybody close to him.
You know,
so
I don't want to, like, you know, regardless of whether that's the case. But obviously, if they feel they can't investigate somebody, you know, that's a sign of not strength, but weakness.
Of a failed state. I think that's an accurate description. And finally, the contact group regulating the war in Ukraine meets in Minsk on Wednesday of this week. All I could say about this is that when is everybody going to realize that the Minsk process is pretty much dead in the water? I mean, if Russia's decision to honor passports issued by separatist authorities in Donetsk and Luhansk last week didn't make that clear, I just don't know what will. Why does Minsk persist, even though basically everybody does know it's dead?
Well, I think Minsk persists because
there's nothing else.
in the West don't see anything else, and it's a way for the West to be engaged and trying to find a solution. And, you know, maybe other solutions or other processes don't look great. Interesting, the decision about passports. I mean, that does show, you know, a huge, you know, everyone's criticizing, saying it
in
the West,
Minsk.
OSCE says it violates Minsk. But they also say that there's no alternative to Minsk. So this will go on. The Minsk process will go on. But interestingly, you see now all these alternative,
right,
so-called peace plans cropping up, most or all of which seem unacceptable to Kiev, and many of which seem unacceptable even to Moscow.
To Moscow, yeah.
But I think, you know, and some of the figures here are pretty shadowy. But I think one thing that's happening with these alternative peace plans is just sort of a further effort by Russia to muddy the waters and
right,
maintain its influence by maintaining kind of a chaos and you know, essentially a kind of a frozen conflict that's not going to go away.
Yeah, and the issuing of the passports does show that Moscow's trying to keep all its options open. Now, if they
want
to freeze this, they can freeze it, right? It'd be much easier to freeze it now that they've recognized recognizing the passports. If they want to make a concession, they can pretend this is a concession and give something up that they didn't have anyway.
Right, exactly. It gives them another kind of
another
card to play. And I do think it's a reaction to some extent to the harsher words from Washington that came out just before that, because Putin did announce it or signed a decree
right after
some of the talk by U.S. officials at the Munich Security Conference that were pretty tough on Russia.
All right. Well, we will still continue to follow the Minsk process, even though it's dead in the water. And that's all we have time for today. You've been listening to the Power Vertical Briefing, a weekly look ahead at stories making news in Russia. We do this every Monday, so be sure to tune in. I'm Brian Whitmore, host of the Power Vertical podcast. Joining me in the studio has been RFRL's news editor, Steve Gutterman. Join us again next week. And now, as always, I leave you with the soothing sounds of Noise MC.